for my pillow.
I am in a particularly good mood today because I have just spent the last hour with two of the most incredible people. We had them on the show, I'm going to say maybe 2-3 months ago, but we had to do it over the phone. And this is the first time that they have been in the studio, actually in the Grape Encounters Emporium and studio. And I got to do a little wine blending for them. And tell you what, there is nothing more nerve-wracking than to blend wine for the people who created the largest brand in America. With me today is Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey. They are the authors of the New York Times bestseller, The Barefoot Spirit, and that probably tips you off as to what the brand is that they created, the Barefoot brand. And Michael and Bonnie, welcome.
Thank you, David. We are delighted to be here.
I'm so glad to have you guys here. Michael?
Yeah, it's great to be here.
What'd you think of my blends?
Well, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, this whole idea is amazing.
It's a lot of fun. I got to blend wine for the biggest names in the wine business. Now, I want to start by saying this. I had somebody come into the wine bar a couple of days ago, and they said, how come you're always talking about Barefoot wine? You're really a boutique wine kind of a guy. I actually told them that you guys were going to be here, and they kind of poo-pooed that a little bit because Barefoot is a big brand. It's a big commercial brand. You can find it almost anywhere. In fact, somebody said, yeah, you can get it in a gas station, which is true. But what's also true about the Barefoot brand is it's probably brought into the wine circle millions, I would guess, of people who might otherwise have not enjoyed wine because it is a brand that was uniquely and is uniquely approachable. Am I right about that? Well, I mean, who was the target for Barefoot?
The target for Barefoot was the shopper of wine in the chain stores. It's the female shopper that goes out to buy her weekly staples, and she wants a product. She wants a brand that she can trust in everything that she's buying, and that includes her wine. It's something that she can rely on. It's got a good price, and the flavor is consistent, and that's a real key to the success for Barefoot, I think, is consistent flavor. Also, it's a label that they will recognize and remember, and it's a very outstanding label. So it's easy to recognize, easy to remember, consistent flavor at a good price, and that's what the female shopper wants. She's buying more wines in the grocery stores than anyone else.
Michael, you want to jump in?
Well, I just want to give some statistics. 78% of wine purchases are made by females 37 with 2.5 kids. So if you start thinking about that, she's buying her Tuesday night wine. She's buying wine that she wants to taste the same from year to year to year to year. That makes it a little different than vintage wine, because if she gets something that tastes funny, she's going to stop buying that product. And it's Tuesday night wine for her. But then again, there's 6 Tuesday nights in the week. So Barefoot never tried to compete. You like that, huh, David? There is. 6 Tuesday nights.
There's 6 Monday mornings in my week. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you're having more fun than we are. But anyway, the bottom line is that America really needed a good Vandetab. And when we started Barefoot, we went to our guru, who was Mark Lyon, who is the top winemaker for Sebastiani Wines. The guy's got a degree in enology and viticulture. And we used to call Mark Mixmaster Deluxe, because he could fix wines that were maybe off or had a problem or too much VA or this or that. And he could create these consistent blends from year to year, no matter what he started with. And actually, that took a lot more skill and knowledge than vintifying wine from scratch on an annual basis.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. And that was the reason that I really wanted to talk to you guys. So I really appreciate, first of all, you coming down here to the studio. I know it's a long journey, and I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you indulging me in doing a little blending.
Oh, that was fun, David.
You're not strangers to blending, but synthesis is the wave of the future, I think. And listeners who want to come to the Grape Encounters Emporium, which, by the way, is EMPOURIUM, Emporium, please come down. I'll whip you up something. And it's a whole lot of fun. But what I think is so interesting is there are a lot of really good big brands out there that if you're having a backyard barbecue, you're having a family get-together, you're having a tailgate party, you know, you don't have to get fancy, because the wines in the $10 price range these days are better than wines that were three times that price 20 years ago. We've got this thing down pat. And it's companies like Barefoot. You know, Barefoot eventually was bought by Gallo in 05, right?
Yes. Correct.
If you talk to any wine, and this is what I said to the person who was in the wine bar. I said, you talk to any wine person about Gallo, you will never hear a winemaker disparage Gallo. Because Gallo is responsible for maybe most of the innovations in creating great wines. Am I right?
I think they've done a fine job of bringing the entire industry forward technologically.
Yeah.
And in terms of consistent product. And they've given enologists tools that they never had before. But getting back to what you were saying about Barefoot, you know, Barefoot, like I said, it was never designed to be a Saturday night wine. It was designed really for folks who maybe they didn't like wine at all. And today, many of these people are enjoying fine wines and fine varietals that they never would have approached before. You know, when we first got started, we got calls from some of the top winemakers in Sonoma and Napa County. And they said, well, you're cheapening wine. You're taking away the mystery. You know, what are you guys doing? You're making a joke out of wine. 10 years later, they would call us up and say, we want to thank you because you filled our tasting room up with people that we know would be still drinking beer if it wasn't for beer.
Come on, seriously.
Absolutely.
They were calling to thank you.
Is that right, Bonnie?
Oh, yes, they did. As a matter of fact, we didn't have a tasting room, but we would hear from other tasting rooms. And we heard it all the time. Our tasting room was really any place where wine was being poured, like for a nonprofit or for a wine function or something like that. That was our tasting room. That's where we could taste our products with the consumer, and we'd get feedback. And what we heard over and over again was Barefoot was the first wine I ever tried. And I tried it because I loved the label, and I could remember the label. And then when I tasted it, the price was right, and the flavor was really there. It even had a gold medal sticker on the bottle, and I could pronounce it. I wasn't intimidated by it.
I think the most interesting thing about Barefoot, for me anyway, is you took a risk that literally has changed the wine world. You two people, more than anybody else, had the audacity to put a footprint on a wine label and make wine fun, and it ticked people off, and now everybody's copying you.
We did that because we were intimidated by wines ourselves, and we thought it was a crying shame. So we tried to give people something that was non-intimidating, non-confounding.
Now, you're in sandals right now, Bonnie, and that foot looks familiar. She's holding her foot up here in the studio. Look at this. I feel like I'm in the Playboy radio studio now.
It anyway, looks delicious, doesn't it, David?
That is a very pretty foot. And is it? Is that your foot on the label?
Oh, yes, that's my foot.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
So if you ever committed a crime, they could just take the Barefoot label and match it up to you, and that'd be it. But you'd have to commit the crime barefooted.
Oh.
Well, I just wanted to say that the way that the Barefoot label came about is quite interesting, because we were trying to collect funds for our friend who was facing a bankrupt winery, and he was a grower of grapes, and they weren't paying him. So we went to the winery and we said, listen, you can't pay us money, but maybe you can trade us bulk wine and bottling services and we'll clear the debt. And they agreed to do that. And that's how Barefoot got started. A lot of people don't realize that was to actually clear a debt for a friend. And it's in our book. So, you know, we went to the largest wine buyer in California at the time, which was Lucky Markets. And we said, you know, what should we do? And he said, well, he said, don't make it a leap. Don't make it a hill or a mountain. Don't make it a bridge. He said, don't make it a chateau. Don't put it in French. Put it in plain English and make the name the same as the logo.
So let me understand this and make sure that everybody out there understands it. You came upon a bunch of wine.
Oh, you bet.
And you had to do something with it.
We had to.
And if you could get rid of the wine, you could help a friend who was owed a debt.
Right.
Bonnie Harvey, Michael Houlihan, I love talking to these guys. They tour the world. They tell people how to be successful. Anyhow, The Barefoot Spirit, a New York Times bestseller. They are real icons, not just in the wine industry, but in the entrepreneurship world as well. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters in just a second. Don't go anywhere. Go get a notepad. Take some notes. We'll be right back. All right, back with Grape Encounters Radio. And it seems completely ironic that somebody from the wine industry would actually be teaching people in other industries how to make money, because the wine industry may be one of the most unprofitable industries out there. It's an easy way to lose money. But we are talking to the pioneers of worthy cause marketing. And in an effort to help other people, they ended up building the biggest brand. Is it America, Michael, or is it the world?
It's now the largest wine brand in the world.
Yeah, you're not responsible for that. You own America, right?
Only the DNA.
Only the DNA. But, you know, you came up with an idea. See, it's funny because I think people look at the supermarket shelves, or maybe they buy it in a packaged goods store, depending upon where you're living. But wherever you buy your wine, they're now used to looking at campy wine labels that have, you know, we call it critter wine when it has pictures of animals, because
that's roadkill.
Yeah,
David.
It's roadkill.
Don't forget bakery goods.
Yeah, bakery goods or some sort of sexual innuendo is very common now on wine labels. None of this would have been acceptable 20 years ago. None of it. But you guys came along and you made the first really concerted attempt to make wine approachable and friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Why the foot?
Well, grapes were originally crushed barefoot to make wine. That had a lot to do with it. And it was a large icon that's friendly. It's non-confounding, as I had said before, and everybody can relate to it. Everybody's got a foot. And somehow, showing a foot makes people smile. So people would actually start having a good time before they even popped the cork.
I think America really, though, wants to know, are your feet happy?
You want to see my happy feet dancing?
I wish that we were on television right now, because we're all wearing dark sunglasses. How did this start? You wanted to, Michael just said, let's be the Blues Brothers for the rest of this. You are a crack up.
Well, you know, my attitude is I'm visiting Southern California. We came through Central California. So I'm getting started by practicing my dark glasses.
Because we all wear dark
cap.
We all wear dark glasses and baseball caps
down
here.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's go back to blending for a second, because you had this master mixologist that you hired, but you guys didn't know squat about wine, right?
No, we couldn't even pronounce the names on the label.
No. The thing is, success in business is when you know what you don't know, and you do what you do best, and you delegate the rest. And we were smart enough to know that we weren't winemakers. And we were looking for a winemaker that could really deliver what that 37-and-a-half-year-old mom with two kids wanted. And that was a consistent varietal taste from year to year to year to year. Now, the guy who we helped out originally collect his debt, Mark Lyon, he was our first winemaker. And he actually came up with a blueprint for Barefoot's taste profile. And he said, you know, the wines have got to taste more like the grapes taste on the vine. So he would bring us grapes. He'd say, these are Sauvignon Blanc grapes. Taste them. What do you think? Okay, so here's the Barefoot blend of Sauvignon Blanc. What do you think? And that really stayed with me. It's a very American, a very Western concept. It's not, you know, wines that have been adulterated or have been overly made or anything like that. It's very clean. It's very down to business.
Were you adding additives that were not grape-based additives to the wine?
No, they were all grape.
Seasonings were all some
So you were
form
seasoning
grape.
With other grapes?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, there are 200 additives that the FDA
something.
Lets you add to wine, and you don't have to disclose that.
Right.
How sensitive were you to that?
Very sensitive. I mean, we use bentonite, which is a type of clay, to clarify the wines, like everybody does. And we use the same processes that most wines use when they make wine.
So simple, clean, and basic.
You got that right.
Fruit forward was another key point that we were looking for.
And full mouthfeel, easy drinking.
If you just jumped in with us, we're talking to Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey. They were the founders of Barefoot Wines. They are the authors of The Barefoot Spirit, which is a New York Times bestseller. They are the pioneers of worthy cause marketing. But there are two things I don't get. The first is this. You were not massively successful, were you, at the time that you took on this project? Or were you? Where would you put your level of success compared to the average American citizen when you first started this?
Are you talking about income or?
Yeah. Financially
successful
were you? You don't have to put zeros on it, but how successful were you compared to other people?
Well, when we first started making the wines, the first couple years, we were actually losing money on every case, but we were making it up in volume, David.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a great way to answer and not answer the question.
Well, let's put it this way. If you're going to give America a good $5, $6, or $7 bottle of wine, you've got to sell at least 200,000 cases just to break even.
Really?
Yeah.
So did you guys party when you sold 201,000 cases?
Well, let's just
say, I think we were working too hard.
They used to say, you know, why doesn't America have a good $5 bottle of wine? We have the answer. We know the answer. The answer is it's too expensive to do that. You have to be really big. You have to have a huge, huge volume. You have to have huge distribution in order for you to be able to deliver that. And that was what held us back for probably the first 5 or even 6 years of Barefoot's existence, was getting up to a level where we were actually making and selling enough to sustain the program.
Wow. Barefoot created an entry point that was much wider than any other entry point that ever existed in the wine business. Hence, it became the biggest brand in America, is today, was sold to Gallo. We're talking to Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey, and we'll be back to wrap up this conversation in just a moment. So go refill your glass. You know, if you need to refill it with a $60 bottle of Cabernet, do it. If you want to refill it with Barefoot, it'll get you in the spirit, the Barefoot spirit. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters after this. Okay, back with Grape Encounters Radio, and just a few more minutes that we get to spend with Bonnie Harvey and Michael Houlihan. You guys took your sunglasses off. Oh, they put them on. Why are we doing this again, Michael?
Because it's fun. I'm not Michael.
Oh, that would be Bonnie. Okay. You guys are a crack up, man. Do you guys have this much fun all the time?
We try. Don't we, Bonnie?
Yeah, for 32 years, we've been having fun.
Yeah. So we were talking. Anyway, Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey, the founders of the Barefoot Wine Company, I don't know that we could name another brand that's had as much influence on what we're doing wine-wise today than Barefoot, because it really caused the wine industry to take a hard, sharp turn into new territory where wine suddenly became not something that mom and dad drank, but that was cool for young people, that was cool for people. And it also made it friendly, because wine was never friendly. And if you look at the wine shelves today, you're going to see nothing but friendly labels for the most part. And winemakers and the owners of wineries sit around talking, how can we make our wine more friendly? And you guys did that. You guys did that. Wow. And you're here in my studio in sunglasses and bare feet. Wow.
That's right. We're still having fun with wine.
Yeah. What are you guys doing wine-wise now? Nothing, right?
Well, we're enjoying fine wines. I mean, we live in the Russian River Valley. You know, it's...
Yes. Can I say that I've been to your house and...
The finest Pinot Noirs in the world are there. So,
yeah.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is now that we're out of the wine business, we're actually enjoying wine.
Yeah.
You know, when you're on the other side of the bar, you tend to be more concerned about your customer's experience. But now we're getting a chance to see what that experience is, and it's delightful. This is a great thing.
So what's the average amount of money that you spend on a bottle of wine, honestly?
For us? I don't know. What is it about?
Probably about $15.
Yeah. Serious? Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes 25. But
do you drink Barefoot wines today?
Yes,
oh, yeah,
we do.
Absolutely.
What I think is amazing about you guys is that normally when somebody sells a company, and you sold your company to Gallo in 05, normally when somebody sells a company, at some point there's this sort of disconnect that happens. And you see how the person who bought your company is treating your child, and you start to feel really like itchy about that.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are just the opposite. You're wearing Barefoot monogrammed clothing. Almost every time I see you, Michael, you've got something that says Barefoot. You're proud of what Gallo did with the company.
Yeah, we're proud of the brand, and we're proud of what Gallo did with the company. I mean, you have to remember, after they acquired the brand, they hired us to be brand consultants because they wanted us to, as they put it, keep the Barefoot spirit alive. And we like that term so much, that's what we call our New York Times bestseller, The Barefoot Spirit. But they have really been meticulous in staying true to the DNA of the brand. They hired many of our people, and they've done a fine job with Worthy Cause marketing. The quality is there. I'm very proud, and so is Bonnie, aren't you, of what they've done?
I am.
She's like sipping a glass of wine over there. You caught her by surprise. She's got this big smile on her face.
I love to catch her by
surprise. She's drinking my blend over there, by the way, which is kind of...
It's delicious. I just finished it off, so we'll have to do this again, David.
Do you think the blend is masterful, by the way?
Absolutely.
You're not putting words in our mouth, are you?
I'm putting wine in your mouth.
That you are.
Well, you have to remember something that Barefoot did that was really different, and that is it was the first nationally successful brand that was non-vintage. Now,
and just, you know, there are people that are listening that don't know what that means. If there are a few. Most people do, but that just means that the wines don't have a date on them because the juice could have come from multiple years.
And well, it should have, because if you're selling Tuesday night wine, staple wine, supposed to taste the same every day, every year, or you're going to lose your customer who's looking for that consistency. Well, then if you have a bad year, like 98 was a pretty bad year for a lot of reds in California, we just didn't use 98. We used 97.
What happened to the 98?
We sold it to someone else.
What'd they do with it?
They bottled it because they had a vintage program. So the idea is that...
And somebody sat there and struggled through that wine.
They probably did.
Don't you feel guilty about that? You should have just flushed that.
Well, no. We didn't own the grapes in the first place.
All right.
So...
Okay.
But we just let others buy the 98.
So you just passed. So does that mean that the next year that you had less wine to sell?
No, there's way more wine out there than there is purchase orders. And that's what people don't realize, is that we're living in a society, as much as we like wine in America, and we are the number one wine consumer in the world now. You know, not too long ago, 8 times as many people were drinking beer exclusively than wine. So this is like a major change. And now we have a market where people are still discovering wine in America. So we could still sell 10 times as much wine in America as we're now selling.
Really?
Yes. The door is
open. So you're saying everything that we make will be sold?
If it's marketed and if it's distributed and if it's for sale and if it's decent, yes.
All right. Let's talk about the wine industry's dirty little secret. Oh, you're both looking at me. Bonnie's shaking her head no. Bonnie, I'm going to throw this one at you just because you shook your head no.
Now okay. I'm in trouble.
The wine industry's dirty little secret. You know, people will go into a wine store and they will see a label that says something like Little Country Winemaker on it. And it's got somebody on the porch in a rocking chair, and it's just this down-home, and you get the sense that it's a little tiny down-home winemaker. And in reality, most of those wines are big, big companies selling those wines under multiple labels. True or false?
I don't know. A lot of...
Come on. Seriously?
It's not... Large wine companies will put out a lot of different labels, and they do like to appeal to people that think that they're unique and they're small. And talking about the winemaker on the porch and the rocking chair or something, yes, that's very cute. And it feels like your neighbor. People like to buy things from their neighbor. It's friendlier. It's somebody they can trust. It's local. And that's a good selling point. It's a good marketing point for these large wineries to be making labels like that.
Yeah, but isn't it super dishonest?
Well, I just want to say this. They're not building any more shelf space out there in the retail world. So when you go into a supermarket, you might see 40 feet of shelf, okay? But you're not going to see 350 feet of shelf. And they're not going to build more just because there's more brands. So when you go to the market, you're going to see the brands that that particular store or box store or chain store or even independent chose to put on his shelves. They're choosing to put brands on their shelves that are going to move quickly. And whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, it's the big boys who control most of the shelf space in the retail store.
So how do I, as a consumer, know whether that little wine is coming from a big producer or a legitimate small boutique winery?
It's pretty hard to know, but I will say this, that many large producers are starting to figure out that if they do acquire a small boutique winery, that they bend over backwards to keep the winemaker intact, to keep the whole DNA of that brand intact. Because they know if it starts to taste corporate, that people are not stupid. They're going to pick up on it. So even though it might be owned by a large corporation, it could still be a cutesy little wine.
Okay, so let me say this about it, that I respect Barefoot for the fact that they don't pretend to be small and down home. They're a huge brand, and there's no pretense there. You know, we make an incredible amount of wine, consistent, good, you know, delicious. And there are a lot of companies, by the way, Kendall Jackson, Chardonnay, delicious Chardonnay, Kenwood, Chardonnay, delicious Chardonnay. They're making hundreds of thousands of bottles of those wines, and those are premium labels. and they're making, you know, wines that sell at $20, $30 or more. You can see a wine like Gergich Hills. I don't know why I'm picking Chardonnays right now, but the Gergich Hills Chardonnay sells for $40 to $50 a bottle, and you can find it in almost any really, you know, respectable wine store in the country.
Yeah, well, there's the key. You can find it. And the reason you can find it is because they have superior distribution. And unfortunately, when Americans go to the wine shop, they think that's all that there is. Now, you're blessed to live here in the Central Coast where you have a lot of brands that people have never, ever heard of. And I suggest that people come here and actually explore and discover some of these brands that they will never see in the stores. The same thing is true of Sonoma County, where we live, and Napa County. There are brands that you've never even heard of that you can go discover. But then when you get down to the brands that are in the store, now you're talking about, what are my choices for dinner tonight? And so there, you're pretty much at the mercy of the distribution system, what's allowed into the distribution system and what gets onto the shelf and stays on the shelf.
The last question that I want to ask you, that I don't want to end this conversation without asking you, because it's something that broils me. Probably no subject has caused me to become more emotional on this show than these, and excuse me, but I'm going to say these SOBs who filed this class action lawsuit pertaining to arsenic and wine. I'm livid about it because it is the most disgusting, despicable. There are no words to describe how horrible that action is. Did you guys ever put arsenic in wine?
No.
No, of course not. No.
What do you think about that?
Well, it's like crying fire in a crowded theater. It's hard to unring the bell.
Yes.
And that's what they're doing to the wine industry.
It was even if they're trying to discredit the industry.
They're trying to discredit the whole industry.
Well, the guy who started all this owns a testing lab, and the same day they came out with the press release on arsenic and wine, he was offering up his services for wineries to come and have their wines tested. You know, he knew there was arsenic in wine all along. He was testing people's wine and he said, aha, got an idea. There's more arsenic in wine than water. So let's, you know, let's shake things up and let's go for the deep pockets.
Was this guy a lawyer, by the way?
No, he owns a testing lab.
It sounds like he was trying to get his word out there and his company out there is what it sounds like, by discrediting another industry.
And I think, you know, honestly, the wine industry, I think the level of concern about quality and people's health, you know, all of those factors, never been better.
I agree.
I agree.
It's one of the most, I think, distinguished industries in this country.
It's highly regulated.
And one of the greatest points of pride for this country.
Absolutely.
And to go after them was despicable.
Yeah, I would say the wine industry, like Bonnie said, it's the most highly regulated industry in America. I mean, you've got to have licenses and approvals for everything you do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's more regulated than the food industry.
Yeah. All right. Guess what? Time's up for today. Anyway, will you guys come back?
Absolutely.
I could just sit here and talk to you all night. In fact, you know, I've got one more segment we got to do. We're going to do the Grape Encounters news is coming up next, because we've got to tell people what's going on in the industry. There's something going on all the time. You know, you could read about wine 24/7 and never know everything there is to know about wine.
That's true.
Takes a lot of research, David.
All right. We're going to take a break. I'm going to blend you guys up something to get you going for the rest of the day.
Yay.
And you guys, so much. What a pleasure to have you here. I just appreciate it so much. You have no idea. I really do.
You are fun to be with, and you're very knowledgeable about wine. I've learned a lot being here.
And a great host.
Awesome. Okay, well, guys, we will have you back really soon. And again, I so appreciate it. And thank you so much for what you've done for the industry, because you've brought so many people into the industry. And I own a wine bar, so you know what? I think I need to send you a percentage. All right, we'll be back.
That's fine with me.
We'll be back with more Grape Encounters after this. And be sure to go pick up a copy of The Barefoot Spirit, New York Times bestseller, and your new book. I forgot to plug it.
It's called The Entrepreneurial Culture, 23 Ways to Engage and Empower Your People.
You know that they're not, you know, it's nice that you didn't say like 25 or 10 or 15. It's 23.
23.
That's all you could come
up
with.
It's a nice round number.
It's not a round number.
We ran out.
You ran out. Or the bottle got empty.
We counted them.
We'll be back with more Grape Encounters after this.